Threat Film Radio. One World International Human Rights Documentary Film Festival in Prague, Czech Republic.
Threat Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2020 One World Human Rights Documentary Film Festival in Prague in the Czech Republic. And this is actually the first interview that I will be recording here at this festival this year, the wonderful festival. And I'm very pleased to be joined by photographer, acclaimed photographer, Jan Grarup from Denmark, actually, originally. So first of all, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
It's a real pleasure. You're here wearing a few hats. There's an exhibition, but also there's a film here about your life that happens to be called The War Photographer, correct?
That's right.
But just in the interest of maybe giving this interview a little bit of a structure, I wanted to start off, this is the first time we meet, so I wanted to start off with a very simple question about what it was that led you to become a war photographer.
Well, I mean, for me, it all started when I was actually 14 years old. I read a doctor dispute about Eugene Smith, who used to work for Life magazine. And when I saw his work from around the world, I really felt enlightened. I felt I got wiser, more clever on certain topics around the world, no matter whether it was a catastrophe somewhere in the world or if it was a village under General Franco's regime in Spain. And for me, that made a major difference. I really felt the empathy and the humanity in his work. And again, I felt enlightened. Later on, when I was around 17, I was very fascinated by cities divided by conflicts. I worked a lot in Berlin, because Berlin was divided by international politics. To a certain extent. And then I actually went back to your own backyard. I went to Belfast.
All right.
And I worked in Belfast for many years, or in Northern Ireland. I was extremely fascinated by the city and the fact that it was divided by Catholics and Protestants, and the struggle for independence. And while I was in Belfast in 87, there were three IRA terrorists who were killed in Gibraltar, and they were buried at Milltown Cemetery in Belfast while I was there. And we got attacked by UDA. And while I did this this document or this story, this reportage, I was not there for the violence. I was not there for the conflict. I was there for the people. And I realized that this was actually very important in actually giving people a voice in terms of independence, in terms of freedom, or in terms of struggle for this. And from there on, it just went on. Then came the Velvet Revolutions in the former Eastern Bloc. You had Panama, the revolution, or the invasion of Panama. You had Ceausescu's fall in 89. Then came the conflicts in the Balkans and the first Gulf War, etc. And since then, that's been a major aim for me, is to try and give people a voice and tell stories which is in-depth.
And the medium with which you do it is photography, and I was wondering whether that was always your preferred medium, or did you try something before you started working with photography?
No, I've always been fascinated with photography. The fact that you could capture a fragment of a second and tell a story by that. I don't really like video or films per se. For me, it's always been about capturing emotions in the second.
Right.
Or in a split of a second, that actually can tell a story.
Why do you think that is what appealed to you?
Well, I mean, if you look historically on this, if you take the very famous picture from the Vietnam War with the small girl running out of a city which was attacked with napalm, both situations were captured both on still photography and on video. But it's the still photography people remember.
That's true. But do you ever think that maybe like the still photography also risks being abused? Because there have been examples in the past of photographs that were taken for one reason and then were used to represent something else entirely.
I think that at the end of the day, it's about trusting the photographer and trusting the idea of what the photographer is trying to say. And you know, from me, from my point of view, you and I could be politically on very, very different levels. The biggest issue, as I see it in the world today, is ignorance or the fact that people don't care. So you could easily be on opposite sides on something, but it's all within the discussion. Mm. It's all within actually talking about what is going on and different point of views.
So what you mean by that is that it's not so important, you know, people's views aren't as important as the dialogue itself. It's important that people talk about certain issues and specific topics.
Dialogue means everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's through dialogue that you could actually, I mean, I've been in many situations where I've been talking to people who thought or think about the world in a different way than I do, where I actually felt that I learned something from it. And that I could see what they were actually saying, and vice versa. So dialogue means the world to me.
Aren't you scared when you go to these places, like where there's a lot of violence and all these conflicts and all these scenes where you witness horrific things happening?
I mean, I've been doing this now for 34 years, so I kind of got used to it. It is really, really dangerous in certain situations. But at the end of, you know, again, I think that somewhere along this, I realized that I had a choice. I could always go home. Mm-hmm. These people can't. And it means a lot to me to try and do this as honest as I possibly can. And since I've been doing it for such a long time, you also gain some kind of experience doing it. But I buried way too many of my dear friends who were doing the same as I did, because it is a very, very dangerous thing to do.
Is it possible that you become so used to doing it that you can't stop doing it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, for me, the most important thing is I have two things that I know would stop me from doing this. One is that one day I physically I'm too old. I simply can't do it anymore. But the one that I really fear is the day where I mentally or emotionally can't interact with people, that you get too cold. And for me, that is the most dangerous thing. Because if I don't get, if I don't feel the people that I photograph, there's no way in the world that others would gain anything from the pictures, and for me that is the block. I don't have an urge to be in a situation that is dangerous. I don't seek it per se, but I do go all the way when I am there to try and tell the story as well as I can.
That's interesting. In this film, actually, The War Photographer, you open up a lot about your personal life. There's a lot about your personal life that is revealed in this film. Do you find that it's a challenge to keep a balance between your work life and your very personal life? We're talking about family and things like that.
Well, when Boris, the director, asked me, I mean, he's been shooting for 6 years.
6 years, yeah.
When he asked me about this film, I was hesitant to begin with. But then I spent quite a bit of time thinking about it, because you have to realize that what I do is exactly the same as Boris did. I go to places where people are the most vulnerable, in the most vulnerable state of their lives in many situations, and still they are able to let me in to their personal life. So I would be a hypocrite not to be able to do the same. So one of the dogmas in this film was what I said to Boris is that if you want to do it, you have to do it honestly. And in terms of what is also happening in my private life, that be divorces or the fact that my ex-wife died of cancer and I was left alone with our three children and had to navigate them through fact that they lost their mother, and out on the other side. And all these things are in the film, because otherwise it wouldn't be a documentary. It would just be me in the situations where I felt good. But in respect for all the people that I met around the world, this was really important. And at the same time, I also learned a really, really important lesson, what it takes for a woman or a man to actually be exposed to someone like me.
Right. But was it also kind of difficult to be in front of the camera than behind the camera in that way, showing your life, you know, so intimately?
I hated it.
You hated it?
I hated it. Because in many situations, I mean, I was so involved in the stories that I was photographing, and I almost felt embarrassed that someone was filming me while I was filming whatever atrocities they were going through. And that was really, really difficult for me. So we had a lot of discussions about that. But on the other, and you know, I didn't have any editorial rights on this film. I haven't been editing it. I mean, the cut that Boris made is his. The only ones who had a say in the final cut of the film were my children, right, because they went through a very, very hard period. So they had a preview on the film and were able to have scenes cut out, which they didn't, by the way. And I didn't get involved in that at all, because I don't give people a possibility to edit in my stories. Mm. So I kind of had to meet it eye to eye in the same level.
You had to accept your role. It's interesting that you used the word atrocities while you were actually saying that answer, because it does create a whole other level of links between this movie that is about your private life and what you do as part of your work. So it's fascinating when you think about it that way.
No, but I mean, was it John Lennon who said life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans, right?
Yeah.
And I was never in a situation where I thought that my ex-wife would die before me. Yeah. We had a mutual understanding that I was probably the one to leave first. And that was kind of how we built our lives, both in marriage and after we got divorced. And all of a sudden, everything changed. And I was put in a situation where I had to navigate my children through this thing. And it's the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life. And it was also hard to actually allow a camera crew to be such a close part of this thing that we went through as a family. On the other hand, I also hope that other people, when they see the film, will think about openness and the fact that actually talking with each other, even in these situations, actually gives you a possibility to move on.
Now, it's interesting. I would love to ask you way more questions about all this stuff, and perhaps because we have gone over the length of time. Last one, though. Is it possible, though, that perhaps the presence of the camera helped you through this whole process of reconnecting with your children, dealing with everything that you were dealing at the time? Is it possible that, in a way, these cameras were actually a positive influence in that period?
I don't know. I do think that I photographed all the way through my wife's illness. Mm. And I photographed my children in their sorrow. And I did that for various reasons. First one, and most important, was that I would be a hypocrite if I didn't. Second of all, the pictures is also a memory and a document of what they went through. And as they get older, I mean, they have not seen all the pictures yet, but they have seen quite a bit of them. As they get older, they will also realize that it's the woman who died was not really their mother. She was heavily medicated. She lost a lot of her sense in this process. So that what they tell me today is that when they see the pictures from that period, that was not their mother. That was the person that they lost. So the memory of her as she was are intact. And that's one of the strengths about photography.
Thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure talking with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.